And welcome to a new edition of Mercenary Musings Radio, a bi-weekly audio program featuring mining analyst and commodities expert, the mercenary geologist, Mickey Fulp. We are your most trusted source for in-depth analysis and commentary on commodities, mining, and the junior resource sector. And joining us on the line from Albuquerque, New Mexico, the mercenary geologist himself, Mickey Fulp. Mickey, I trust you've been well?
I have, Rob.
Okay. I'm happy to see the end of hockey season myself. This is not hockey weather, Mickey. This is baseball weather, so good riddance to the Pittsburgh Penguins and their Stanley Cup victory.
Well, congrats to them. They certainly were the better team in the finals.
Okay. For this edition of the program, Mickey, we're going to talk about the only element on the periodic table that we have not yet discussed. And without it, you and I, well, and everyone listening to this program, just wouldn't be walking the face of this earth, would they? We're talking about oxygen, number 8 on the periodic table.
Yes, Rob, we are talking about oxygen, and according to Wikipedia, it's a cable TV channel that targets young, unemployed female viewers and is owned by NBC.
Yeah, I came across...
I say that in jest because I went to Wikipedia, or to a Google search, I should say, and I had to scroll down to the bottom of the page to get to the element.
Yeah, that was the first time I've ever had to do that as well, Mickey, in doing some research for the show. And I'd never watched the television program myself. Have you?
I didn't know it existed. I saw it on a Google search.
Okay, well, we're talking about number 8 on the periodic table. Let's talk about its properties, Mickey. Colorless, odorless, tasteless?
Yes, highly reactive gas, number 8. On a periodic table, third in abundance in the universe between hydrogen and helium, or behind hydrogen and helium. It's the first most abundant in the crust, and it comprises nearly 50% of the Earth's mass. Mm-hmm. As you said, colorless, odorless. It occurs as most elemental gases as diatomic, meaning it's O2. In the oceans, 89%, 23% of the atmosphere. It's essential for all life. Occurs both as organic and inorganic compounds. Also occurs as ozone layer, which gives us protection from ultraviolet radiation from the sun, but also causes a lot of pollution on the surface.
Okay, you mentioned the oceans. Mickey, we're talking about plankton, aren't we?
Yeah, so that has to do with the biochemical cycle, oxygen cycle between the atmosphere, the biosphere, and the lithosphere, which would be the crust. Photosynthesis is almost entirely algae, plankton, bacteria, which produces O2 into the atmosphere, and then respiration, decay, and combustion would deplete O2 in the atmosphere. Mm-hmm. There really was no oxygen in the atmosphere in the early Earth until about 3.5 billion years ago, and it did not occur in any abundance in the atmosphere until 3 to 2.3 billion years ago, and that's the ages of the banded iron formations when the most of the oxygen was in the ocean, and we ended up with these giant iron formations, what we talked about before, and
right.
Essentially enables us to have the life we do today with iron and steel. But the transition from anaerobic to aerobic life around this period of 2 to 3 billion years ago is really what set a lot of oxygen in the atmosphere. And from Cambrian time, 540 million years ago, to the present, atmospheric oxygen has varied quite drastically from 15 to 35%, and it is at about 23% today, as we said.
Okay, why that variance, Mickey?
No, it has to do with the abundance of life. So whether the Earth is... abundant with life or not, and also depending on the climate. Mm-hmm. For instance, cold waters hold a lot more O2. That's why the Humboldt Current, that upwelling current from Antarctica, has the richest amount of ocean life in the world.
Okay, discovery, I believe, was what, late 1770s, a Swedish pharmacist, I believe. But there were also early experiments were carried out many hundreds of years earlier.
Well, yeah, there have been. But really, the discovery was names we've discussed several times before. Scheele, the Swedish chemist, mm-hmm. Priestley, who was English, Lavoisier, who was French, all between, or in the 1770s. Lavoisier actually took credit for all this discovery. He's the one that named it oxygen. The English didn't like that, but that name actually stuck because it ended up in a poem by Darwin's grandfather, so that's how it's still called oxygen.
Mm-hmm.
There had been some earlier experiments by Robert Boyle. They had a really hard time understanding, because it's colorless and odorless, air is, what caused combustion, what caused respiration. So by the late 18th century, that was all figured out. It was first liquefied in late 19th century, I should say, by Dürer. People from chemistry will know what a Dürer's flask is for holding very cold liquids.
Mm-hmm.
1901, acetylene oxygen welding was discovered. 1923, Goddard made the first liquid rocket fuel. This sounds like a combustible concoction of gasoline and liquid oxygen. And then we kind of go on from there.
Production-wise, do we have a good handle in terms of how much is produced globally every year?
Yes, we do, a lot.
Mm. Mm,
100
okay.
million tons a year.
Mm.
So let's put that into perspective. The world uses 20 million tons of copper, 44 million tons of aluminum every year. So this is a major industry, 100 million tons of oxygen produced per year. It's produced by a variety of means, fractional distillation of air, something called pressure swing adsorption, electrolysis of water, a couple other methods. It's stored and transported in pressure tanks or very cold in cryogenics.
So, Mickey, we have about 100 million tons of this being produced annually on a global basis. What are the applications? How is it used?
Well, it's curious to me, and I didn't quite know this, 55% of the use is in iron smelting. Now, I knew they used a lot of oxygen in iron smelting, but that's the majority of use. Chemical industry uses about 25%, and then the medical, the cutting, welding, and water treatment industries use another 20% or so. And then you have some very minor uses, like for spacesuits and scuba and submarines and mountain climbers, the ones that still use oxygen.
And your Denver
climb Everest.
Yeah, and your Denver
non-pressurized airplanes.
Your Denver Broncos on the sidelines when they need some oxygen.
Yeah, right, right. Especially in pro football, you see these guys sucking oxygen on the bench between going in on plays, and there's debate on that if it actually does them any good or not, if it's just psychological.
Yeah, just a kind of a placebo. And also, it can be toxic at certain pressure points, can't it? You mentioned scuba diving, for example.
Yeah, it can be toxic, but only if you're really breathing it at high partial pressures. So there's been a lot of mistakes made with breathing very high pressures of oxygen, but people pretty much learn not to do that now. The real hazardous part of it is it's the oxidizer in the world, so it's the most highly combustible thing we have, and fires and explosions. If you're my age, we all remember Apollo 1 in the late 60s, which blew up in a test, and that was because they were using pure oxygen for that test, and a little spark from an electrical connection blew it up right there and killed three astronauts. So, you know, very explosive compounds, peroxides, chlorates, perchlorates, nitrates, which we talked about before, about making ANFO with ammonium nitrate.
Mm-hmm.
I've told you my little anecdote of making potassium permanganate bombs when I was in high school. So
That's quite the story, Mickey. We've heard that a couple of times. That'll go down in history.
Yeah, so that's the real hazard of oxygen.
Okay, who are the big producers out there, Mickey? And is there an investing angle to this story that's worth pursuing?
Well, I don't, unless you want to play the world's largest industrial gas companies, and there's a list of them, the Linn Group, Messer Group, German, Air Liquide, French, three that are American, Praxair, American or Air Products, Air Gas, which is now being taken over by the French company.
Mm-hmm.
There's a Japanese company, Taiyo Nippon Sanso. So if you want to play the world's largest industrial gas companies, there may be an investor angle to it. Most of these companies are going to be listed on the DAX or in Germany or the New York Stock Exchange. Here's what I found out. There's an ongoing consolidation of this group. There's been a couple of them actually taken out in the last two or three years into this larger group. For instance, Airgas, by the end of the third quarter here, is going to be part of that French company.
Okay. All right. Well, with oxygen now in the bag on Mercenary Musings Radio, we've completed our rundown of the periodic table. It's been a long haul, hasn't it?
Well, it has. I think it's occupied. I think our show is now into its sixth year. And, you know, well, do the math. We have well over 100 shows on the periodic table.
Okay. Any ideas for next time out, Mickey?
Oh, I've got some ideas, but I think I'm going to keep them under that my hat right now, and we'll do some surprise. But rest assured, it's going to have something to do with the commodities business.
Okay, the mystery will be solved in 2 weeks from now. Thanks a lot, Mickey, and we'll talk to you then.
All right, thanks a lot, Rob.
That's Mickey Fulp, the Mercenary Geologist. You can find him on the web at mercenarygeologist.com, and you can always hear Mickey's latest opinion exclusively on mercenarygeologist.fm and kitco.com. I'm Robert Graham at Mercenary Musings Radio. Thanks for listening.